about the tattooing on the chin here.
That's for men.
On the women. But also that some of the Siberian women had more tattooing out here on the cheeks. Like this?
No, from the mouth, just a V part.
A V line that went from the edge of the corner of the mouth up and then down along the cheeks.
You see that picture downstairs in that Kira shop?
Yes.
On this side?
Yes.
The woman sitting down on top of the eyes?
Yes.
With naked?
Yes.
And the fellow was with those pictures, his name is Kipitora Moses.
Yes.
He seen that himself and drew the picture of it.
Oh.
And they come to that eyes and they're looking for Ugru. They thought there might be some Ugru going laying in, right in the middle of that eyes. They climb up on those rough eyes and they see that lady sitting down. The way they see these woods with the hair hanging down on her back but no clothes. But they didn't notice it. She had her feet in the water like that, keep in the water. And so they didn't go over, they might be something happened if they let her know. So they just get away before she noticed them.
Well,
the way they start in Siberian coast, when a young lady become a woman, they always put the tattoo on her.
Right over here?
All over. I've seen a lot of it. And then, when the young lady...
They mark the arms, too, with straight lines or...
Just meet on an anchor or some animal to their bodies.
Uh-huh.
So it's like they would get easy of living and getting the animal easier, I guess, or something. And they mark, I've been a lot of Eskimo ladies, they have a mark right there.
Yeah.
And then they put one up here too small.
Small one up between the eyebrows.
Just one little line.
One little line between the eyebrows.
Maybe two, three needle holes.
Ah. Two or three
needle
holes.
The mark is made out of the charcoal.
Yeah.
And
sinew.
They tap it to the sinew and then work it through and then another one on. And then that mark was for life.
Mm-hmm.
For lifetime.
Go ahead, Paul.
And then when the young lady, when she become a woman, when they didn't put tattoo on her, she started going out to the ocean. Sometimes they never catch the lady because she can run faster than anybody and she just shoot right straight out to the ocean. That's how those women stays on the ocean. They're still alive, and the one Kipitora Moses saw it, she's the one that run out from Siberian coast. But no, they said no woman goes out from this site.
Ella Smith was also saying that she's heard stories where if the young ladies aren't tattooed, they are told that they get restless to the point where, like he says, they go out to sea, you know. But if they tattoo them, then they return normal. And this is on the Siberian women. But she says she's never heard it from people on this side.
Very good. I'll have to go down and take a picture of that drawing of Moses.
It was alongside of the counter, see, on this side. You've seen that. And there were three men, James Moses and two others from Sismara. They went out with a skin boat on the front of the Sismarev, they saw big eyes, they go down there, and they come to the eyes, and one fellow go up on top of the eyes first, and he look, and pretty soon he turn around and wave to those other fellows, and they come, and they all stand up and look at it. They use glasses, binoculars, they look at it right close, just like you were right close to me, just like that day. printer, you know. He took that picture. He looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, when he become an artist, he think about that and draw. So that's the way he saw it, he said.
That's interesting.
Then I had a bunch of those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So then when he draw it, we used to sell them. When I worked last summer there for a while, I used to sell those pictures for $1 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sell them, somebody selling to the people.
Mm-hmm.
I make quite a few dollars. One time I nearly got $1,000 in my cash register when a lot of people come from the States.
Oh, the tourists came.
The tourists came.
Uh-huh. Very good.
If these women in Kotzebue making those stuff with the tourists like, they it's time now to make it. Just not when the tourists come in, because tourists like to have those things. What the Eskimo mean? They go up there, when somebody sent it, the stuff from another village, they sold them here. When they sent it to the person, last summer, somebody handed me 10 masks made out of a bone. It wasn't in good shape either. And he told me, sell these for $30 a piece. And I sold every one of them to tourists. Some of them take two. And besides that, I sold my books to tourists.
Mm-hmm.
The winter time is pretty slow for selling my books. But in the summertime, sometimes I ordered 100 books. In a week time, they're gone. I sell my books for $5 to the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
My lawyer told me to sell it for $5.
Mm-hmm. Good business.
And I got a letter again another day from Lutton and his wife. And they said, magazine people like to have your pictures, your dancing pictures. If you had some, please send to us. So I sent them four. I never heard anything yet from them again when they got it, but they got it. That Lennon and his wife, they gonna come up this spring in June.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote me a letter.
Yeah, I have a letter from them today. I haven't read it yet.
So you tell them I was with the group, with that old people group.
I will.
And tell them that my daughter died 3 days ago.
I wrote them last night and told them, so they know. Okay, very good. Let's ask. The other day, we were talking about looking at ahead at the future. Is there any way that Eskimo could foretell or could see what was ahead 1 week, 2 weeks ahead of time? Going to get sick?
You know that Mr. Moore could get sick. He's one of them.
Yeah.
He's the one that told me. I told you already.
Yeah.
About the caribou. Gonna come back. Windy up in this area. They gonna be gone. And those two words he told me, they come true. And the next one is the one. Third one is gonna be the caribou gonna disappear.
Right.
They will never. He don't think they will come back.
Percy, what I'm getting at is something like some people in the world, premonition or. They look at viscera of animals, and they know how to read signs. Or they look at the shoulder blades, capillomancy. They look at the shoulder blade, and they see something of what's going to happen. Did you ever hear of anything like this?
I've heard rare little on that, but that seems to be kind of a rare belief of this prediction.
Uh-huh.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And at times you don't even know exactly what it is, but it's going to just happen. And you know, and I had the warning for something like that
mm-hmm.
Before that, but I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to be the common belief here. don't seem to have too much on that thing either. So
well, not according to this lady. She said in early times they used their amas to know, to know a bit.
Yeah, that differs from here and there.
I think in specific cases, though.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
Just like I think that many old people really know when they're going to die a few hours or a few days ahead of time. They can feel within themselves that life process is slowing down.
Yeah, like in the case of my grandparents, I was raised by my grandparents, and I really wanted to go away to go to school. And they didn't allow me to go for a couple of years, but the desire to get an education was there. And finally, they consented to let me go. Now, as if they could look into the future, they admonished me. My grandmother told me that if I should become ill, that I should use my will to live. If I ever became ill.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing my grandfather said, before I left, he had me make arrangements to start getting logs down here to build a house at Pauline George's in Nome. He said in the future, when I came home, he wanted me to have a house to sleep in, as if he could see what my life was going to be, that I would be coming here, but not living here, but he wanted me to have a house to sleep in. Now, as it turned out, I got pneumonia when I lived in the damp country down there, and evidently a scar that I had, a tubercular scar that I had burst, and then I came down and had tuberculosis, I had to rest. And because I didn't have the resistance, I was in the hospital a long time. And I had surgery and had different experiences where I had to use the will to live in order to survive. So I don't know if it was because that they knew me so well because they raised me, or if they felt inspired to advise me this way.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that they advised me happened.
Mm-hmm.
That if I became ill, that I should use my willpower to overcome the illness.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was hard on the parents to lose an offspring,
Right. Yeah, I think that answers my question. Unless
they stay about an early day named Manila.
Mm-hmm.
We have headed to Cobra Field. Did you never ask Cobra Field about that? Huh?
No. It's called a bad place? A rough place?
No.
A person named Manila.
Manila.
We do have some information on him on the work that I did this summer.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
We got it.
No.
You got the right answer for that.
The Amber people, the Cobra people, he was a Cobra person, and they considered him a prophet among the people because his powers were not like the rest of the Angatgoks. It was they couldn't find it anywhere in the subterranean from where they had their powers. And when he was breaking the taboos, he traveled, and there were certain taboos, like the ladies, in her monarchy,
mm-hmm.
when they had to stay by themselves, he said that. And the women who went to have their children in a little hut by themselves, he said, eventually that would be no more, And some other things that he foretold, because some of these taboos that the medicine men imposed on the people were being broken, it angered them, and they wanted to destroy him, so they went looking for his powers and couldn't find it. And so they felt that his powers were from the upper direction because the Angatgoks had no power over a certain height. And he had a pole that he would stick on the ground, like a flagpole with a string on it. And when that string started, you know, even on a still day, when it started vibrating, then he knew there was a message. And then the thoughts would come to him, and he would start to prophesy, and that was his contact. To the people, he was he made life easier, much as those three brothers, who killed the animals that would kill the people, you know, and the monsters, you might say, the monsters of the area, including a huge bird that would take a man fly away with him. Where those three brothers took care of these beastie type of things, then this Manilak took care of the taboos, the certain area of the taboos, and made life easier also for the Eskimo. And he also foretold that Ambler, at that time, you know, was not a city, was not a village or anything. People used to camp there. But he said, in the future, Ambler will become a city. I can see the lights from here up to the Jade Mountain. He said, and that because of the activity of the mountains, in the mountains where the riches would be found, the city would grow. And so about 1959 or 57, somewhere in that area, some families from Shungnak moved to Ambler because fishing is close, hunting is close, it's a good place to live. And several families have come in, so now they have quite a few,
Yeah.
They have quite a few people, and others still coming in, and even some white people moving in. And there were
And that's fairly close to the copper mine, is it not?
Yeah, and one of the things, one of the first things that he prophesied was there would be a ship flying over the air. You know, he didn't know what else to call it, and he prophesied the coming of the airplane from the direction of Koba through
east,
the river.
Yeah, from the east.
And he said in it there would be a person that we could understand. There would be an Eskimo person in there also. And that's how it turned out. They flew over the river and landed there, and there was one Eskimo there that they could talk with.
You know who he was?
Subic Atakamnik Patemnya.
Who was the Eskimo?
You remember Amelia?
Inupek?
Imani okhave matungim nya maneyak ting misuni mama nga alga ke sirup nakman inyu pe khave sit mek it nakman damna inyu pe nga kisu ti langat ka kisi mana pe hai I've got it written down in my literature anyway that I got from Ambler this summer and from Kobo.
Do we have any dates when he lived or died? Is he this century? Must be with the airplane, to predict the airplane.
Must be very early in the 1900s. Must have been. Eventually, he moved up to Northwest Territory in Canada.
He did.
And he has a a granddaughter, or something up at Barrow. He took his daughter and his son with him when he went to Canada. And I think Della Keith knows some of his descendants that she met up at Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they came over from Canada or if they lived there, but Andrew said something that I hadn't heard, that you know, he lived in the days when the Eskimos slept on their on the floor, you know, but he had an elevated bed made of logs, which was different.
I think we're onto something here.
Mm-hmm.
Something of the thing that John is looking for.
Okay.
Let's take a break for a moment, shall we? Yeah, I'll have a little coffee break.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess that's the first plane landing in Norway.
Kind of
I get to get home.
You have? Where did you get it? Was this a photograph?
I could photograph myself.
What year was this?
Quite a while back, in the first plane landing in Norway.
1920. First plane here was 1924, wasn't it?
One of the things that is yet to happen in his prediction, in his prophecies, is the sight of a whale, sight of a black whale, to be seen up in that area. So now they don't know if it's going to actually be a real whale or something that looks like a whale. That's the kind of talk that I keep getting. Some people think it's going to be a real whale that'll surface up there, you know, in one of their waters, and others think it might be something else that looks like a whale, like a landing craft, a black landing craft or something. So we don't know at this point.
Spaceship?
No, it's supposed to surface from the water.
Submarine.
But there are areas along the rivers where the earth is just floating, you know, and under is water, and that's how somewhere in the delta area of the Kobuk, you know, where some of the people have perished because they didn't know they camped on this floating tundra.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day some of them fell through and perished. And in that spot, once in a while, a skull will surface.
Hmm.
Because still there's still a movement, you know. They said there'd be a lot more people today if these disasters like that had happened. Yeah.
How widespread, how general is knowledge about Manila? Does everybody?
She knew of him. In fact, she reminded me of the whale.
So it's known to Kivalina and up the Kobuk.
Uh-huh.
No attack side.
Uh-huh.
Buckland.
Oh yeah, I think the name Manila Kimya. Kalimit to sama mi bedroom. Because somebody mentioned about his breaking the taboos in the season of hunting the beluga. I don't know if it happened in Buckland or if it happened in Sisolik. One of the two.
We've got to inquire into this.
Yeah, because
these are the things we're beginning to dig into.
Yeah, but if we read the translations of the work that I did this summer,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that information is in there.
Are there any other prophets like this that anybody knows about, like Manila, who were positive, not evil medicine men,
yeah.
but were positive? Kind of a folk hero.
Let me look in your bed, in your cockpit. Manila, it don't make it not, it's a bonus. there was Manilla and his prophecies, okay? There were the three brothers and their fixing of the country, you know, making it safe from those beasties. There was also a Kayaktaw Nakduk, and they say there are the adventures of Kayaktaw Nakduk are so many that the old folks said they could tell one of a story about him every night for a month. And his thing mainly was fixing up nature, you might say, I think. And because he'd come to a group of people who had some kind of defect. And then when he was through and started to leave, he'd realize they'd either be a bird family or an animal family. And there's a long story on this also.
Okay. This is extremely good.
Mm-hmm.
I've got
and,
ideas
of
pouring. When they tell me about him, he starts at Stonakduk, and it's marked on the map where this Kayaktaw Nakduk starts from, you know, at where he's born. And when his grandmother was a young girl, I guess she had always heard of the story too, and she went with some older kids, and they went up. And at that time, the logs, the posts of the house were still standing, and a lot of grass, you know, like grass will grow in a place where they once had a house. And some of the people, I guess, dug into it and found some artifacts from there. But right now, he says it's kind of a mound of gravel now.
I've been up there about a couple of years ago in that place there where they're throwing stuff left.
Mm-hmm.
It's still up like that, you know, weird like that. But that house, you can see it. I mean, that igloo.
You can.
Yeah, it could be. Right behind that stone of tilt. When I worked with Winston's builders. And before that, I was there too when I was young. But like a few years ago, I was up there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
It's a real person.
That's
and
a
even the Indians have stories about him because he also went to the Indian country. I think even Paul Green knows Kayaktaw Nakduk story.
A lot of people
even
heard
though
about
he,
that. Yeah,
even though he grew
all
up in
Kivalina,
see?
One time my father and his brother Nasup, they were telling their story when the moon comes up. Just when he comes out. So he told that story every night when the hunters come back. So when they get through with that story, the moon was all gone too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is what they say in Selwyn, that you could tell the story, the adventures of Kayaktaw Nakduk, for a month every night.
That's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is what he just said. At the new moon, his grandfather started telling the story, and by the time they were through, it was the end of the moon, you know.
They taken all ours,
yeah.
Just when he was eating, they just stopped, and then the trophy. They're telling a story when the person that kind of tired, never meant take it. That person takes it. And then they tell the story in 1 month.
Mm-hmm. There's so many outside adventures. I think what we need to do is try to get out as much of it, you know, and then mark on the map his travels.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We
have to
here.
Complete that. We also have to complete
the
life of Monilla
and
also those Ilyagannik and Suluk and Kubrabak, those three brothers. Mark on the map where they lived and what they did. And there's also a story of the copper man with him.
On the slides.
Mm-hmm.
Put the slide just above Shomitok Point.
Kivalanyagmi Sama. Kivalanyagmi. Kupom Nigaklim. Sanlinyangani. Sanlinyangani. Naki. Kupokmana Nigaklim Kupuwa in Niran Mitup. Abrumasma Sanlinyangani. Igit Kanangami. Ishone. Igit Kangani. In a group, surely.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows where they come from. Never been told the story either.
Even up here.
Upatamana, Kivalinavum, Nunanga, Vivirangitikara, itna, Kotigitik, the covenant of the Kama. Upatuli, Bivikshakaralaku, we have from now until the 1st of July to still talk about. All those historical places and cemetery sites, you know. Samatamatko ilisimare kakpata, ubunga maktogluit, pikpata, tasama yalitinayakta.
Sama tabranga suli, nabrami pekaktaunga, tapunanga nunanit, makuninga, makuninga kirungnik, kirungnik tupinga tayakasimeju tapko, ilipangani yunatot. Tamara, Uyanglik, Sinatanik, in that 4x4, Ruyanik, Ayakakim.
Percy, can you give me a translation?
Oh, I don't know where to went to what, but he said he knows.
You know, there was a village on the back of Kivalina River, on the North River, Kopak River, that goes out to Point O. On the North River, at the Kopak, there's two rivers on Kopak too. One come closer to one. They had a V down there. The one Kopak river is like this. On this side of that, on the mountain, on top of the mountain, there used to be a village about six igloos there on top of the mountain. Some people been living there. Way ahead of time, nobody knows. And these posts were sticking up from that place. It was all rock, solid rock.
Mm-hmm.
I know where they come from. Nobody knows it, even in the story. And up in Big Miguel River, on the other side of the mountain, while I was hunting a fox, I saw a big pile like this, you see,
mm-hmm.
in one certain place. And when I go over there to those things, it look like a lumber. Look like 2x12, 2x6, 2x8, but they were all slate, and 2x4.
Okay.
Just
okay,
like
right
that. They pile up on top of each other.
So it was an igloo made out of stone.
That was out of a stone.
Mm-hmm.
It was the north side of a Big Miguel River.
All right.
On the other side of the hill.
So what's Andrew saying about this?
Same I think that what the Hallgreens is, made out of stone, like they've been for Edward Damon and John Chappell, they've been trying to crown up right inside the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
North side of mountains, big high mountains.
Mm-hmm.
You could better what they see than guys you call it Edward Damon and John Chappell. They're moved.
Mm-hmm.
They've been there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I heard that what he told me, Edward told me. I know it didn't myself.
Let me turn this off for a minute and ask. Percy, in American Indian history, you know Sequoia, who gave the Cherokee their alphabet.
Yes,
and I'm sure you know the story of Handsome Lake, the prophet to the Iroquois.
Well, I'm not too familiar with it right now, but I've read the Sequoia a few times in my younger days.
All right, now. But, you know, I had the letter from my very senior professor suggesting that what we needed to find to pull the group of people together was some prophets.
Uh-huh.
Now, those are the things that would make good motion pictures that would be useful and that would have meaning and give direction.
Yeah, if you're going to make a picture of a prophet, we got Manita.
Ah. This would be worth
best bet.
And his powers were used for good, you know.
Yeah. All right, then this is the kind of thing.
And then there's also the other side where the Amakoks, you know, looked for his power to destroy it and couldn't. Yeah.
But then this would be a very good legend to make a picture of. And that would be within the line of the things that we can ask for funding for.
And he had sisters who were also descendants of them, like the Custers and the Douglases. You know Herbert Custer?
Yeah.
Here. He's one of the descendants of the sisters, and also the Douglases, the Cleveland. They all know him, and their descendants are still alive, and you could get real pertinent information.
And we could come up with something. Maybe, I don't know. You remember the Three Stone Blades picture? Whether we could reconstruct, this is what I'm asking, so I can think about planning something, whether we could reconstruct by Old Parkey, Kayak, whether we could reconstruct this, or whether we could do it by animation or part. But I can certainly go back to Hollywood and find out. How best to make this, but
this is one of the reasons why we have named our nonprofit corporation Manila.
Because it was a good
for one thing, in today's language, Manila means no money, you know, which is no profit, nonprofit. But in the real sense, because we wanted to honor an honorable man from this area.
That's why we named
All right, then this becomes even more significant that you've honored him, like the founding father kind of concept.
Yeah, he prophesied that the life of the Eskimo would get better because these taboos would no longer have a hold on the people. And that they'd be traveling through the air and everything, you know.
And they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think they used to say this right here, if it sounds like that, like a radio. They never tell you about that?
I don't remember. Go ahead, talk about it.
Come on, tell us.
I mean, we should ask for the COVID people when they're on here, you know.
Well, now, I heard them say that there were some individuals that up Koba, that it was just like having a radio in the house because they were able to go out and communicate.
Yeah. If they got a phone right now, they would call up the Koba any place, you know, if they got a phone.
Uh-huh.
I think I heard it that way too, but I'm not sure though. But they've been talking about the airplane will be coming east from east. But that's right, you know. Like coast. Like
Do you see gears grinding in my brain? I do. I feel the gears grinding.
Yeah.
Going around like this.
We need to research that with all the people who know the Monadnock story, because I think the last, there's just one more thing to happen, the whale. And then I think what he said after that was he couldn't see beyond that. What the next episode was beyond that.
Yeah, that's
as far
it.
As
yeah.
He went.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's what they used to say that. After
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You can't see it overhead.
That was the end of his vision.
Now what does, symbolically, the whale is black and rich and fat.
Some of them thought it might be a landing craft that they got up there one time, you know, with freight, you know, because it you let it open and it looks like it opens its mouth and then all the stuff comes out of it, you know, and it was painted black. Now, I don't know if that's what it means or if there literally will be a whale.
I was questioning whether, in the absence of knowing of a mineral such as oil, he was predicting that something black and rich and fat would come,
mm-hmm.
which could be the oil. It's just another, it's a possible interpretation when you don't know what something is.
Anyway, he told the exact spot where it would be seen, where it would come up.
He did.
Yeah.
That's worth pondering, isn't it?
Yes, it is. She keeps reminding me. she's familiar with it. She grew up in Noatak, and she's lived in Kimberly, and she's lived in Norman. And she remembers portions of it.
Very interesting. How do we best go out to collect those stories?
I think, let's see. For a start, you can look into the work that I did this summer.
Yeah.
It's translated. And I think I translated that portion of it myself. If it's Amber, I translated Amber myself. Because I felt that portion was important enough to be just as correct as they gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. We could also probably send tapes to the three villages, Kobuk, Shungnak, and Ambler, and see if they have any other information that wasn't given,
mm-hmm.
and have them put it on tape to us. You know, we could send them a copy of the information that we have now,
mm-hmm.
and ask them, do you have any other information for the sequence of his life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of his movements,
mm-hmm.
where he went,
mm-hmm.
where he, what, where, if we could find out where he said what. And did he have any schooling at all? I wonder.
It would be interesting also to if anybody knows his ancestry.
Yeah. Who his family, who his parents were,
uh-huh.
grandparents. This is back to your genealogy.
Uh-huh.
We're on to something. This was a good session this morning. We're on to something pretty good.
Should we take a little break before lunch hour? Or
yeah, I thought we should. Let's take a little break.
Yeah, and we can try and get rested up before lunch hour.
That's right. Ah, oh, we can't work far.
Thank you.
Inuit nor Alwit. Do you miss the example kind of you could see that?
Ya pamit ni, saya pun pakai matruk, kalau tak boleh.